This is the best of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis on Fox Sports Radio.
I want to start when I go around the crew here with Eddie Garcia. Eddie, you go to some of these games in the StubHub Center and watch the Chargers. Your wife is a big Chargers fan. You guys have watched this season pretty closely. What would it be like if the Chargers had home field advantage in the StubHub Center? What can you imagine what the experience would be like?
Yeah, it's something that's been discussed amongst the Chargers fans. And, you know, it's a tough situation because you've got the hardcore fans like my wife who literally would not accept really any price to sell their tickets because they're so loyal to the team that they want to give them an advantage. And then you've got kind of fringe fans to where if a team with a big fan base was coming in for a playoff game, they wouldn't turn down the amount of money they're going to be able to get for those tickets. And, you know, that could very well pay for their entire season. I can kind of see both sides of it, but, you know, it's been difficult. There are some fan bases that come in, the Chiefs, the Broncos, the Steelers haven't been yet, but if they were to come, you know, that they take over the stadium pretty much. And for a playoff game there, I just think it would be a really tough situation. I know the players are kind of used to it at this point, but it's not. They don't have a true home field advantage. They haven't had it since they moved into the StubHub Center.
Yeah, I mean, so the reason why I bring that up is if I'm sitting around looking at the AFC playoff picture right now, and I am anybody other than the Kansas City Chiefs, I am rooting like crazy for the Chargers to win home field. Because, like, I mean, let's just look at it right now the way it's set up. If, for instance, you are a Steelers fan, you are the number 4 overall seed right now. Let's say you go on and you win your division. You find a way to win that division. You would know, hey, okay, we're going to play against the 5 seed, which might be the Kansas City Chiefs, right? Right now, that's the way it would be set up. If the Chargers ended up winning this division, the Chiefs would be the 5 seed. If you are either a Chiefs fan or a Steelers fan, you would feel like, hey, if we won that game and we're then advancing to play against the 1 seed, right, which could happen, depending on how exactly the breakdown occurs in the wild card, you could send, I feel like, your entire fan base out there and take over that stadium. Like, you could feel like you basically are creating your own home field by traveling out to L.A., and buying up as many of those tickets as you can. Now, some of those people wouldn't even have to travel because L.A. is such a hodgepodge, such a cosmopolitan city in terms of people who have moved into the area, who grew up in other places. And you could feel like you could go in. And the same thing would be true, by the way, if you are a Patriots fan. And you're sitting around saying, well, we want the game to go through Foxborough. But if you're a Patriot fan, I feel like the Patriots could travel all the way to L.A., and basically take over that stadium too. And I have no idea what the tickets would end up costing, but can you imagine an AFC title game in a 27,000 seat venue? I would think that it would be just a massive, massive amount of money to be able to get in there, because tickets in general are expensive, and there just aren't that much of, there isn't that much availability there. And by the way, it's not just the teams that I mentioned. Obviously, the Steelers, the Chiefs, and the Patriots, you feel like they could travel and bring a pretty big crowd there. I think if you're a Ravens fan, I think if you're a Titans fan, I think if you are a Miami Dolphin fan, I think if you are a Tennessee Titan fan, and you think, hey, maybe my team could win a game, and then usually you're like, man, it's really tough to go on the road against the number one seed, you could do it. Like the Colts, I mean, I don't think anybody would be nervous. You imagine Andrew Luck and the Colts being nervous, plus in L.A., you know, the weather's going to be pretty good, so it wouldn't be that awful. It's not like you'd have to worry about any kind of weather condition in late December or early January when that game would be played. I think it's a no-brainer. I guess it would be, you know, mid-January when so many times the weather can be awful. This would be remarkable. Now, you also are setting up the possibility of L.A. having both number one seeds. It's not crazy to think that the Rams could win out and the Saints could lose one more game. And it's certainly not crazy to think that the Chargers could win out and that the Chiefs could lose on the road against the Seahawks. So we got a lot to break down here about this game. I thought it was an amazing game. An extraordinary game the way it came down the stretch. 877-996-6369 if you want to weigh in. I'll go to the rest of the crew. But first, Eddie Garcia, why don't you go ahead and give us an update from last night?
Yeah, on the road to the playoffs, the Chargers beat the Chiefs 29-28. L.A. rallying down two touchdowns in the fourth quarter. They score with 4 seconds left to pull within one. Instead of kicking the extra point and going for overtime, they went for two in the win. And they got it thanks to Mike Williams, who had 3 touchdowns in the game, 2 receiving, 1 rushing, and caught the game-winning two-point conversion. Chargers clinch a playoff spot. Both they and the Chiefs are now at 11-3 on the season and tied for the top record in the AFC and the top record in the AFC West. The Chiefs do, however, hold the tiebreaker. Speaking of being on the road, do you think it's okay to drive stoned? The truth is your reaction time slow way down when you're high. Not only do you put yourself in danger, but everyone around you. Stop kidding yourself. If you've been using marijuana in any form, don't get behind the wheel. If you feel different, you drive different, get high, and get a DUI. On the NBA scoreboard, monster game for James Harden as the Rockets beat the Lakers 126-111. Harden goes for 50 points, 10 rebounds, and 11 assists. Spurs over the Clippers, 125-87. Magic beat the Bulls, 97-91. And the Suns took care of the Mavericks, 99-89. What does it mean when Geico says just 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance? It means you probably should have gone to geico.com 15 minutes ago. Back to Clay Travis in the Geico Outkick the Coverage Studios.
We are indeed here in the Geico Outkick Studios, where it's easy to save 15% or more on car insurance with Geico. Go to geico.com or call 800-947-AUTO. The only hard part, figuring out which way is easier. Now, this was a really good, I think, Thursday night football year, but what a way to close it out. And I'm curious for the crew out there, was the officiating so bad that it took away from your enjoyment of this game? Because it did for me. Because I was sitting there watching, and I know a lot of times fans want to focus on one particular call. I thought the officiating was really equally bad both ways. In other words, I don't know. I didn't watch it and think, oh my God, you know, the Chargers have gotten every call here. And I didn't watch it and think the Chiefs, oh my God, have gotten every call here. I thought it was equally bad and canceled out equally. Danny G, did the officiating impact your enjoyment of this game?
Yeah, you're spot on with saying how it affected both sides, because obviously you could point to lots of calls that helped the Chiefs as well earlier in the game. And of course, down the stretch, things seem to go more the Chargers' way. But the refs seem to have an effect on way too many outcomes this year. And I don't understand the inconsistency. I mean, we expect consistency out of the players, our head coaches, and everybody else in this great league. But for some reason, we can't get consistent calls. And like what you were talking about earlier on the show with defensive holding, it pains me. You can't bail out that offense with calling holding every time.
I feel like one solution there would be to eliminate an automatic first down.
Yes.
If you're going to call defensive holding and it's going to be a 5-yard penalty, which it most often is, you can't call a 5-yard penalty and have it, you know, if it's 3rd and 20.
Right. Forget the automatic first down. Yes. It doesn't make sense.
It doesn't make sense to give an automatic first down there. I would just give the 5-yard penalty and then you can redo it. I would also say, if you're going to call defensive holding, it needs to be really egregious. Like, I need to watch it. For instance, there was a defensive holding called on the next-to-last Chargers touchdown. I don't remember the receiver, but he was open going across the back of the end zone, and he dropped the ball. Phillip Rivers made a good throw. He should have still caught it. But you watch the replay, and it was clear that the Charger receiver was being grabbed and his jersey was being held. That's textbook defensive holding. It was also taking place in the end zone. All of those things, that I'm fine with, right? Like, if you watch it and you say, okay, it's hard to watch that and not be 100% convinced the defensive holding was going on. But if I go back and I watch a play and I see it and I think, ah, man, I don't know. I didn't see a lot there. And I know the officials have difficult jobs, but that to me is what you're paying them for, their discretion. It needs to be really, really bad and noticeable in order to make the call. I don't want borderline calls to be made. And that's why I've said on the show before, I almost think that you should be able as a coach to challenge a bad officiating call and let it go back to New York. I mean, Mike Pereira can sit there and watch it and be like, yes, right call. No, wrong call. He's phenomenal with Fox broadcast. Why couldn't somebody like Mike Pereira be employed to review judgment calls and quickly determine whether or not the right call was being made. Everything the officials do is a judgment call. So this idea that somehow you're going to make officials question how, you know, how to do their job if you hold them accountable and say, you know what, that pass interference call that you called, not really a textbook pass interference call, I think that makes total sense. Everything in officiating is a judgment call. So people say, oh, you can't have judgment calls be reviewable. Why not? Everything's a judgment call. Was his knee down or not? That's a judgment call. Did he get into the end zone or not? That's a judgment call. So everything is a judgment call, and we review, if you expand the definition that way, everything. So why wouldn't you review really questionable play calls? I feel like if a coach has got one or two challenges for penalties, that would actually be somewhat preferable. Now, it's rare. I think they said, for instance, last night, Andy Reid, they challenged whether or not a catch had been made. It's relatively rare that coaches' challenges even happen now on these play calls, right? I think they said Andy Reid, through last night, through 14 games, has challenged four plays and been right three of the times. Most coaches are not challenging plays that often because the play calls are not being missed that often. They get a lot right, but it seems to me that the judgment calls are the ones where there's a tremendous difference. What about you, Dub? Do you feel like that too, that it's starting to take away some from the enjoyment?
It definitely did last night, and it seemed to me like so many of them came at such crucial times
yes.
in the game, and it did take away from the experience as a whole for me just watching it on TV.
And what about this? Maybe I'll ask this question, and we'll take some of your calls right now, but I'll ask callers right now who are listening. I might ask you guys to weigh in on this. Are makeup calls the right move? If you saw, as an official, that you had missed that helmet-to-helmet on Phillip Rivers, and it should have been a first and goal from the five with a full timeout left and four plays to get into the end zone, was it the right call to call defensive pass interference on a borderline play that gave a first and goal from the two or whatever it was for the final play, a couple of plays there? I think it's an interesting question. Let's go to William in Nashville. What's up, William?
Hey, good morning, guys. You know, I don't want to blame the whole loss on the refs. Like you were saying, there was bad calls on both sides. But at what point does Kansas City look at Bob Sutton and do a serious evaluation of the guy's career? Because our defense is horrible. You know, our run stop is a wet paper sack.
Yeah.
You know, and I know most of the Kansas City fans are waiting for him to pack his bags, and I'm pretty sure half of them will help him.
Yeah, you know what's interesting? I thought that a couple of the throws that Phillip Rivers made last night, it didn't matter what defense you were in on that final drive. The 31-yarder on first and 20 to start that drive is a throw that maybe three NFL quarterbacks even attempt in that situation, because it was such an improbable and incredible throw. And then the fourth and eight throw, I don't know what you could do to play better defense than the Chiefs were doing there. Now, the two-point conversion play, yeah, you had two guys follow the one receiver and the other one was wide open in the end zone. That should never happen, to have a guy that wide open to lose a game. But a lot of that, I thought, was Phillip Rivers' excellence more than it was Kansas City Chiefs' futility. Tom in Virginia, what's up?
Clay, appreciate your show. Longtime San Diego resident, moved back east to Williamsburg, and it's really tough to see the name Los Angeles Chargers.
Yeah,
but
right.
So I appreciate when you said LA/San Diego. And just a comment about the being a longtime resident, say they're going a lot of Charger games. If they, whenever another team played, there was half the stadium or more was the other team.
No matter who it was. Even in San Diego.
Raiders, anything. So, yeah. In San Diego. So, and then the last comment is, they have this stadium in L.A. They got this giant stadium in San Diego, 60,000-plus seat stadium that's just sitting there empty. So, I'll take
yeah, you know what?
Off the air.
I think it would be beautiful for the Chargers if they decided to go play the playoffs in San Diego if they had home field. I really do. Now, they won't do it, but I think that would be a pretty awesome move by them to leave behind the StubHub Center and go back to San Diego for the fans that supported them for so long if they actually had home field advantage and had a chance to go win a Super Bowl, to go back to where they had spent most of the last, whatever it is, 30 years. Let's go to Jeff in Kansas City. What's up, Jeff?
Hi, Jeff. Hi, Clay. Thanks for taking my call. Hey, I'm with the first caller. I'm not going to get bent out of shape about the refs. That's not a fun way to live. That was a good game. Unfortunately, that's just football. You touched on it earlier, but in 9 days, that Chiefs-Seahawks game in Seattle, Sunday night.
Massive.
Mahomes versus Wilson. I mean, the NFL just has to be salivating over that. That's basically a Christmas Eve night game. That's going to be absolutely huge and winning in for the Chiefs. So let's go. And all that's out there. Thank you.
Yeah, look, I mean, if you're a Kansas City fan, as crushing as that loss was, you go on the road. Is that the Christmas? Is that not Christmas Eve, right? It's the Christmas Eve, the Sunday night football game, I think, on the 23rd. Am I doing the math right there? Everything runs together, but I think that's correct. There's going to be a lot of people sitting around, staying up late to make sure that they don't miss that game. And it's going to have so much significance for the entire AFC playoff picture now. And now the one thing I would say for Kansas City fans is, at least if you're kind of breaking that down, there's not a lot to gain for the Seattle Seahawks. Right. Now they have a game on the road this weekend against the 49ers, I believe. And it's possible if they play poorly in that game that they want to kind of get everything right with the world. And it's a big game. But they were basically slotted in, probably barring a collapse, at the 5 spot. And so if they're a 5 seed, they don't have anywhere near the stakes. Now, I'm not sure exactly how that plays out. Does that mean that the Chiefs come in tight and nervous, needing to have a win and with so much at stake, and the Seahawks, who play incredibly well at home and play usually very well in signature kind of primetime games under Pete Carroll and with Russell Wilson, that they come out loose and just ball their asses off? Or does it mean that that the Chiefs come in with so much more intensity that they win a game that matters infinitely more to them in the regular season than it does to the Seahawks? I don't know. But we're already talking about that game, and it is, what, 9 days away, whatever the math is there? And I can tell you, it's going to be a hell of a game.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick, the coverage with Clay Travis, weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific, on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
I disagree. There's very few things I disagree with about the NFL playoffs. The one thing that I have been fundamentally in disagreement with for years is that if you are the number 2 overall record in the AFC, like right now the Chargers are, and you're substantially better than the other teams, right? In other words, you have that number 2 spot outright. It isn't like you're winning it by a tiebreak or something. I think it's unfair that the swing is between winning the division and having the number 1 overall seed to falling all the way to 5. I think you should seed in the NFL playoffs based on record. And if they gave me a magic wand and they said, okay, Clay, what would you change about the NFL playoffs? Really, the only thing I would change is I would say you get an automatic bid if you win your division. I'm fine with that. But you don't get an automatic home playoff game. I don't think that makes sense. For instance, if the Pittsburgh Steelers finish whatever they would finish, seven, let's say they finish 8-7-1, and somehow that wins them the AFC North. That would mean that they lost both of their games the next 2 weeks. Let's say they lost to the Patriots, and then they went on the road and they lost to the Saints, came back and won the final game of the year. I think it's against the Bengals or whoever they're playing to close out the season. I don't think that the Steelers should get to host a home playoff game over the potentially 13-3 Chargers who beat them head-to-head in the regular season. Does that make sense to everybody out there? Because the Chargers could finish 13-3 and lose out to the Kansas City Chiefs, who would also finish 13-3 on a tiebreak. And as a result of losing their division by a tiebreaker, they would fall all the way to the 5 seed. And despite going 13-3 and going on the road and beating the Steelers head-to-head, the Steelers could host that home playoff game against the Chargers at 8-7-1. Or the Ravens could host it at 9-7. Either way, that doesn't make sense. If I were seeding the NFL playoffs, I would say top four teams by record get home playoff games, regardless of whether they won divisions or not. You still have two wild card teams, but you then reward teams like the Chargers or, and maybe end up the Kansas City Chiefs, who played really well during the season and were the second best team, and not drop them all the way down to number five. And I've thought that for 20 years. As long as the NFL has been doing their playoff in this form and fashion, I've never thought it made sense that you automatically reward division winners, even if they sometimes end up with inferior records to wildcard winners, just by a quirk of geography. I think it's unfair to either the Chargers or the Chiefs that because they happen to be in the same division, that they're then not allowed to finish 1-2 overall in the NFL playoffs. I'll ask the crew whether they agree with that. By the way, we're going to be visiting with Jeff Shorts here momentarily. But first, let me go ahead and bring in the play from last night. This is what it sounded like on the Chargers radio network. If you were listening down the stretch, the Chargers driving the field, and they had this play to tie, we thought, before they decided to go for two, the game, and then they went for two, and they won, and this is what it all sounded like.
Rivers in the shotgun. Looks to the right for Mike Williams. Throws to Mike Williams. Caught! Touchdown! Touchdown, Chargers! Mike Williams with his third of the day. Shotgun snap. Rivers rolls to the right. Throws to the end zone. Caught! It's good! It's good! Mike Williams with the grab! Chargers lead 29-28.
That is the way it went down. Incredible, improbable ending. Phillip Rivers writing a hell of a script there for his LA Chargers, who are now 10-1 in their last 11 games after starting the season 1-2. Do you guys agree with me that the seeding, in the event that both these teams finish 13-3, let's say they all win out as is, or even, you know, that one of these teams loses but still finishes 12-4 with the second best record in the AFC. Do you agree with me that it doesn't make sense to automatically give home playoff games to the divisional winners, Danny G?
Yeah, I understand where you're coming from on that. I wonder, how would you do it if we just started from scratch and you realigned everything? Would you just do away with divisions altogether?
I think divisions probably are helpful for scheduling purposes, because otherwise the NFL might think that it's too overwhelming. Like, this way, they know that they start off with six games slotted already. You play everybody in your division twice, and then you play, you know, it's an easy setup, I think, schedule-wise, because then you play one other division from the opposite side, right? So everybody's division plays another division from the NFC. I'm not really concerned with the way it's set up. I think you just simply say the top four teams get the playoff games. Like, I don't think that it makes any sense to have divisional winners automatically get home playoff games, because it presumes that all divisions are created equal. And I think it can lead to ridiculous results, like what could happen if you just look down the tea leaves here. I don't think it's improbable at all that the Chargers could have to go back on the road to play against the Steelers, even though they will have finished three or four games better than them in the season and have beaten them head-to-head. What sense does that make at all? Eddie Garcia, are you with me that, like, it makes a lot more sense to just take the top four teams and give them home playoff games?
Absolutely. Why should you reward a team because they play in a crappy division? I totally agree with you. The teams with the best record have earned it through the regular season. They should get to host a playoff game.
And I think it really could get brought into stark relief here if it were to happen that the Steelers win, and let's say they go 8-7-1 and find a way to win that division because the Ravens fall to 8-8, right? Or something like that. You could have a totally aberrant result where the 13-3 Chargers, who would be the second best team in the AFC and have just narrowly lost a tie break to the Chiefs, would have to go on the road and play against the team they already beat on the road and that they finished, whatever the math is, 4.5 games better than during the regular season. Dub, are you with me?
Yeah, I'm with you, and I think this is something that should go through all major sports in the United States. I mean, I know this is a little different, but right now in the NBA, every team in the Western Conference except for the Phoenix Suns would be in the playoffs if they were in the East.
Yeah.
I know it's kind of a different conversation, but same sort of idea there.
Yeah, I mean, I've said this before. I mean, when you have slanted conferences, kind of, and one side ends up stronger than the other one, I think that's tough. And look, we've had in the past an even more ridiculous result. I remember, I mean, it seems like not many years ago to me. It's probably been a decade. The Seattle Seahawks went 7-9 and hosted a home playoff game. They didn't even have a winning record, and because they won what was an awful division that year, they got to host a home playoff game. That's just nonsensical. That was before they had Russell Wilson. Matt Hasselbeck was still the quarterback there, so it's been a while. But every now and then you get these situations that arise that make no sense. Roberto, are you with me? Just go ahead and let the top four teams get home playoff games?
Yeah, it should be by record and not what division you're in. Like the NBA has it.
So I think you look at the I think you look at the way that's shaken out. That's an easy fix. The NFL, somebody called in earlier and said, hey, the NFL spends a lot of time looking at rules every offseason. To me, that's one that would just be a really easy fix. And then you have still two wild card teams, but the two wild card teams just get slotted in and everybody gets seeded 1-6 based on their record. I mean, that seems to me to be make perfect sense. And I don't know why you wouldn't just adjust it. I'm fine with the eight four-team divisions because, again, I think it makes it somewhat easy to kind of at least know what a substantial portion of the schedule is going to look like, and it kind of keeps things fair. And I'm fine with every division winner getting a bid. I just don't think it makes sense to give every division winner a bid and also guarantee them a playoff spot when I think if you look at the AFC West this year, with two games to go, it's a very good chance the top two teams in the NFL are going to be the Chiefs and the Chargers. Instead of putting them into a situation where they fall all the way from 1-5, we should be talking about right now, hey, it looks like the Chiefs and the Chargers are going to be the 1 and 2 seed and get byes in the first round of the playoffs. That's the way we should be talking about this. And I don't know how many other people are going to come on the radio or write columns about it today, but it's something that I have thought for years. And every now and then it becomes more apparent than other years. And this is, I think, one of those years where we're going to look at it and say, wait a minute, why do we just automatically give home playoff games to the four division winners when a wild card team can be the second best team in a conference? It's just nonsensical to me.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
Jeff Schwartz, give me a letter grade for the officiating last night.
Wasn't very good. I'm not even sure it's average. I'm like an ardent defender of referees on Twitter because I feel like they get a bad rap. But the problem is last night was bad, right? I mean, you have the holding call on the first drive. It's amazing how many times the Chargers this year have scored on a possession after getting kind of a gift call. Remember, or no calls, right? They scored twice this year when the offensive tackle was clearly offside. One of those eventually led to a firing of an official. They scored last night off of kind of a phantom holding call on Sorensen. Now, look, the last drive of the game, that was a helmet-to-helmet on Rivers. I mean, that gets called even before this new rule got put in. So that was pretty surprising. I mean, that was a clear I don't terribly believe in makeup calls. Like, I don't think the back judge thought to himself, I have to make up because I missed a call. But that was an atrocious pass interference.
Are you dying? Right now?
I might be. I was up late last night just stewing after this loss. So it was upsetting.
So let's kind of break this stuff down because we were talking about it earlier. So when you you played 8 years as an offensive lineman, and yeah. I feel like for a long time there was the talk, oh, you could call holding on almost every play.
Yeah.
I feel like on the offensive line, one way or the other, I feel like now a lot of times you can call hands to the face and also defensive holding on almost any play. And so when I criticize officiating, what I say is if I'm going to call defensive holding, I need to consider the time and the context. If it's 3rd and 10 and the defense is doing a pretty good job and the defensive holding is not egregious, it's a huge decision by me to throw my flag, even though it's only a 5-yard penalty, because it guarantees the offense 3 more plays. And I thought there were at least 2 different defensive holding calls that were made that were clearly not defensive holding, or at least they weren't so egregious that it should have been called. And both of them led to touchdowns. Now, one was for the Chiefs and one was for the Chargers. And the other one is like, I want the discretion to be used in a smart way by officials. When Patrick Mahomes is getting sacked and somebody lightly grazes his face mask, you know, as part of the sack, like the offense has lost that play. I don't like when the offense gets bailed out because, like, look, if a defensive player grabs like the quarterback by his face mask and yanks him down, and that's the only reason the tackle is happening. But if it's an incidental play as part of a sack, I feel like that's just a huge swing play because that Chiefs drive probably is dead there if they don't call that face mask. Now, it's just a couple of plays, right? Do you agree with me in general about that analysis?
I'm fairly certain they called that penalty on Bosa against the left tackle, not on Pat Mahomes, because he grabbed his face mask and shoved it back, which is not allowed anymore. They used to not care about that. I don't think that was on Bosa hitting Mahomes' face mask. I could be wrong, but his hands were all up in Eric Fisher's grill. As far as the holding, so I generally agree with you, right? The 3rd and 15 defensive holding, but the problem is like if you're an official throwing that, you don't know what the quarterback is doing.
Yeah.
So.
But you know the scenario of it being 3rd and right. 10, and so if you throw the flag there, it gives an automatic first down.
Right. So you can say it should be a 5-yard penalty and no first down.
Yeah, that's what I said earlier.
But to just say that the referee should know better is kind of tough because what if you're holding the tight end and he's the primary read, you don't know that as the back.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying if it's a clear hold. Like in the Chargers' third touchdown, there was like the guy, the defensive back had his jersey and was clearly tugging on it and holding it. That to me is like an obvious and readily apparent hold. But some of these others, like if you're not, I just feel like defensive holding is getting called a ton and you watch the replay and you can't tell why it got called on one play and not another. And we can't have calls like those.
Right. No, I agree with you. I will say, however, the Chiefs like lead the NFL in defensive holding. So it's no surprise to any Chiefs fan. They got flagged for pass interference defensive. Well, they lead the NFL. I looked it up. There's a website actually lists every penalty in the NFL. You can go and look it up. It's a free website. Like the average per team for like defensive holdings and pass interference this year is like 7 or something. The Chiefs have 10 and 11 heading into this game of both pass interference and defensive holding. I mean, they're way above and beyond what any team does as far as that. So that doesn't surprise me, but I generally agree with you. Right? 3rd and 18, there's a slight holding or illegal contact downfield, and it wipes out the 3rd and 18 and makes it a first down. I generally am with you there. That's a lot for a defense to have to give up for maybe a holding that doesn't affect the play at all.
We're talking to Jeff Shorts, former NFL offensive lineman. His brother Mitch is on the starting offensive line for the Kansas City Chiefs right now. We're obviously breaking down Chiefs Chargers. Okay, so you also mentioned the Phillip Rivers like hit to the head. I thought that was an egregious miss because, one, he was already on the ground, and you're trying to protect quarterbacks, you say, excessively no matter what. Two, he clearly got wrecked and got hit in the head. You watch a lot of college football. In college football, that is 1,000,000,000% flagged, and they go look at whether or not it's targeting to eject the player. It seems to me, and like college football fans complain a lot about the way that targeting gets implemented.
No, I hate it.
But yes, the goal is clearly to try and protect players. If the NFL truly cares about protecting players, shouldn't of all the calls, the one they never miss should be a helmet-to-helmet on a quarterback?
Yes, I agree with you there. Again, kind of go back to how I typically sort of defend the refs at times. I mean, look, we get to see replays in slow motion of great angles. I mean, where the referees were, that could have been hard to see, and I understand where they could miss that call. I mean,
but I'm saying make it a default automatic. Throw the flag like in college, and then if you're wrong, you can review it really quickly and take it off the board.
So, okay, so here's what happened. So, this leads to something that I absolutely despise about the inside two minutes reviewing a play. So, let's say they review the play, and inside of 2 minutes, Chargers have no timeouts. They had one there, but let's say they have none. And they review the play, and they rule that there's no targeting on the field. They'll give a 10-second runoff to the Chargers for reviewing the play under 2 minutes if the call is not reversed on the field. I think that's the rule. And, like, that to me is I hate that rule so much. Like, the Chargers did not initiate the review. It's not their fault. The NFL missed the call or wants to make sure the call's correct, and they initiate the review, and the Chargers get charged basically 10 seconds for it because there's no timeouts left and the clock is running. So I agree with you that they probably should be reviewable, but – the same people would complain that there's a 5-minute delay with 30 seconds left in the game to review a targeting call.
And sometimes that happens, but if your goal is to protect a quarterback, that's one you can't miss to me. And also, by the way, Anthony Lynn is not getting criticism over this, but he didn't call timeout immediately after that play, and they let like 15 seconds run off while Phillip Rivers was arguing about that. If they had lost this game or if the clock had run out, then that would be a huge story because that was pretty bad mismanagement, I thought, on the sideline given the circumstances. Okay, we talked a lot about the officiating already. Let's talk about Phillip Rivers. He made two throws on that final drive that I'm not sure more than two or three quarterbacks in the NFL could or would make. On first and 20 to begin that drive after a holding penalty, he throws an incredible 31-yard pass over the middle of the field that is just like, my balls are bigger than your balls, an unbelievable throw, right? I mean, that you are an off. I mean, that, like, that's a throw that not even very many NFL quarterbacks would attempt, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, the guy across the field and across the sideline can do that. That throw Mahomes can make. It's the second throw that's the one that sets him apart from most quarterbacks.
The fourth and eighth throw, I mean, that was perfect. Well, the Chiefs fans have called in this morning on my show complaining about defensive coordinator and everything else. There's no way to defend the throw that he made on fourth and eight.
No, I mean, and Trichman said that. He goes, look, I mean, Fuller's right there. Like, what do you want him to do? I mean, like, his throw was in the only spot where it was the wide receiver's ball and no one else's. And those are kind of, you know, that throw reminds me of a lot of those back shoulder fades that Aaron Rodgers throws where, like, the ball is only caught by the wide receiver. That's the only option. There's no other option for the defender because these quarterbacks have such pinpoint accuracy now. And I love Phillip Rivers. He stands in the pocket. He takes hits. He's a tough SOB. Seems like he's fun to play for. And that throw right there is pretty amazing. I mean, I think that, you know, the stats circulating, and when teams are down 14 plus points with 5 minutes left this year, they're 0-88. Rivers was like 0-20 in his career. And then obviously they won the game. And I love the call by Anthony Lynn to go for two there because you have a 3-game lead in the wild card. Like you're making the playoffs. And you're not winning the West, and you're not getting a home game if you don't win that game last night. And so I thought the call was fabulous. I think a lot of coaches might kick an extra point, which now doesn't get made all the time, and then play for overtime. And he said, screw it, man. And look, it makes sense. The Chiefs' defense is awful. I mean, I would do that. I mean, man coverage, a little inside-out route, a little switch route, and that's it.
It's also really smart because there's only 4 seconds left, so you either win or lose the game right there. It's almost impossible for the Chiefs to then come back and do anything offensively. Like, it was set up perfectly in that scenario. And, you know, look, the Chiefs now, I mean, they talk about the fine line between wins and losses. The Chargers now have won a game on a two-point conversion effectively to end the game, and they have won a game on stopping a two-point conversion against the Titans to win a game. It's amazing to win both sides of that equation in what is, you know, a really high-pressure-packed situation there. So, obviously, we now have two teams tied at 11-3 coming down the stretch with two games to go. One of them will win the division. Right now, the Chiefs have the tie break. Right before you came on, I kind of hopped on my soapbox, and I said, I'm curious what you think. To me, it doesn't make sense in the NFL playoffs to reward a team that wins its division that is infinitely worse than the second wild card team's overall record. And in particular this year, we could end up with the 8-7-1 Pittsburgh Steelers that lost at home head-to-head to the San Diego Chargers, so the L.A. Chargers, getting to host them even though the Chargers finish 13-3 and lose the tiebreak. Shouldn't the NFL award home field to the four best teams in each conference as opposed to the four division winners, regardless of what their records are?
I mean, I guess an ideal world. I mean, you know, the 2013, the year you jinxed the Chiefs, we were 11-5. We would have had, a home game in that situation. Right?
Yeah.
Because I think we're 13-3. We were 11-5. And I don't know. I'm not a big fan of just changing the playoffs based off of 1 or 2 years.
But this happens a lot. This happens a lot. I mean, to me, it's an easy solution. I think everybody would kind of nod and say, okay, I get that.
So then why have divisions?
Well, I think the argument would be, the argument for the division would be it makes scheduling a lot easier, honestly.
It does make scheduling easier. But, you know, there's going to be years where your division's good, other years your division's bad. I mean, it's what kind of makes the NFL fun is that there's importance to winning your division, right? I mean, that you have to – you know, the Chargers, if they don't lose to the Broncos at home and chuck the game away, then they're winning the division right now. They didn't do that, and now they still have to go to Denver. They have Baltimore. The Chiefs, I think, are going to lose in Seattle next week. I thought they were going to lose in Seattle, win or lose the game last night. And then you got to win the right games, right? The Chiefs have the tiebreaker right now because they're better in the division. So I don't really see a problem with it. I mean, the Chargers now have won in Pittsburgh and Kansas City, so if they're the 5 seed and have to go play in Pittsburgh again, I don't really think that's a big issue for them.
As you come down the stretch, should Chiefs fans be nervous?
Yeah, I don't think the Chiefs are going to win the Super Bowl. I said that since the Rams game. Everyone was, you know, look, we overreact so much after. It really does bother me. I mean, like, it's funny because there's people in the NFL that know better, that know that the NFL is not a league to overreact. And maybe college football is because, you know, there's emotions of the kids and whatnot. But the NFL is not a league where you overreact very often. And after the Rams and Chiefs game, everyone's like, oh, my God, defense is dead. It's never coming back. And then people screaming about this would be the Super Bowl. Both the Rams and Chiefs were never making the Super Bowl. And that doesn't change my opinion of that. The Chiefs this year, this is a bonus year for them. Pat Mahomes' first year is a starter. Their defense is still a work in progress. This does not surprise me at all. I never thought they'd win the Super Bowl this year. I still think they'd win the Super Bowl this year. And that's fine. You have a young quarterback. Like, you have time. You have 3 more years under his rookie deal.
So who do you think is going to be in the Super Bowl then if you don't think the Rams or the Chiefs will be there?
The Saints. The Saints are good. I think we look at that game against Dallas and think to ourselves, well, they suck because they lost to Dallas. Look, their defense has played really well. They allowed 13 points to the Cowboys. They allowed 14 to Tampa. They were 14-3, stormed back to win that game by 14. And the Saints are good. They're going to have home field. They're going to play in the Dome for their 2 games. That's a big deal in my opinion. And I think they're going to win the NFC. And look, until the Patriots lose, I'm going with the Patriots. I mean, that's kind of the way I always feel about the playoffs. If, you know, the Patriots will probably not have home field now unless some weird stuff happens. But until they lose, I'm going with them. Look, I think San Diego is a good, viable option. It'd be really weird to see an AFC championship game in front of 27,000 fans, half of which aren't even the home fans. So I wonder if the NFL would, like, move that game to a Coliseum or something. That'd be really wild, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would be. It would be wild if they decided to move it to San Diego and play in front of the old home fans. Now I'm curious for you. We haven't even played this audio yet. I will next segment, and then I'll let people react. You're a former NFL player. When you hear Stephen A. Smith breaking down the game on First Take, and he says the matchup that he's most interested in watching is Hunter Henry, who hasn't played all year, despite the fact that Stephen A. says he's been very good all year, against Derek Johnson, who no longer plays for the Kansas City Chiefs. I think he's out of the league right now.
Yes.
What is a player response when you see things like that?
So I sort of defended him on Twitter yesterday because, hey, like, who cares, man? I mean, if you're turning to Stephen A. Smith for NFL analysis, that's your problem, first of all. And second of all, like, he just does. It's the Spencer Ware I get, right?
Full disclosure. Like, I was making bets on who was going to score the first touchdown in this game, and my initial bet was Spencer Ware. I just didn't know that he had been ruled out.
By the way, I love how you give Furman a grief for, like, taking, like, a really sharp, weird play, and you and Sal just bet the board, and he just takes, like, a prop. Like, it's amazing. I love
it. Yeah, on our show, Lock It In, Furman, like, bets all these games that nobody cares about, and I try to bet. Because my thing is on the show, people like gambling because they want to hear what you think about big games, right? So right. Furman's like, hey, I'm a sharp. Sharp guys don't bet on big games because they tend to be picked over and they're harder and stuff like that.
Yes.
Every week this year, I have bet on Monday Night Football and I've bet on Thursday Night Football because that's what people watch. And I think your average fan bets on games that he watches, not, you know, like Furman put a bunch of money on like an English Premier League soccer match to end in a tie. And I don't even know what happened in the result. But I'm like, nobody is – first of all, the number of people watching the EPL is low. But the number of people watching the EPL and betting for a game to end on a tie is like infinitesimally small, right? So So Sal and I try to bet games that people actually care about. Furman's out here betting – you know, like, I think he bet Georgia. Yeah, he bet Georgia State UCF college basketball earlier this week. And I'm like, there's literally 8 people watching that game.
And it's great because, I mean, I get what he's doing, obviously. He knows what he's doing. He's a sharp. But, like, I'm with you. I bet, like, last night, for example, the one bet I love Chargers over 24.5 points. Like, that's the one bet I made. And then, like, I was like, I can't go without betting the line in this game. So, like, an hour before the game, I just bet the Chiefs. I knew it was a terrible bet. I didn't like it. But I was like, I have to have some action on this game outside of the root of the
Chargers. Oh, I mean, as good as that game was, that touchdown pass with 4 seconds left, in addition to the fact that it obviously changed the outcome of the game itself, it hit the over, and it also got the Chargers to cover. And then when they went for two, a lot of people, like me, were like, yes, because then you know if you had the Chargers plus 3.5, you win one way or the other, right? Like, it's unless you get an amazing, like, you know, touchdown return or something with 4 seconds left, you basically guarantee that you got the win. Whereas if you go to overtime, it wouldn't have been a surprise at all if the Chiefs had gotten the ball and scored a touchdown to win it, right? So that's pretty crazy. So your prediction is you think the Chiefs go on the road and lose against the Seahawks?
Yeah, then they lose the Seahawks. They beat the Raiders in Week 17. But look, the Ravens will win this weekend against Tampa. They'll go into San Diego next week. San Diego doesn't play well at home because they don't have a home field advantage. Who knows how that game goes? But then they have to go to Denver, and Denver has a possibility of being 8-7 heading into that home game, the Week 17 game. And they already beat the Chargers. Like, there's no guarantee the Chargers go into Denver and win that game, Week 17. So it's going to be a wild ending. And look, we have Patriots Steelers this weekend, so the Patriots have an off chance of winning out, you know, and getting themselves back in the hunt of being again at home field advantage. So it's a wild both sides. I think are pretty much a wild ending. The Saints, I feel like the Saints, they have the Panthers twice down the stretch this weekend in Charlotte Monday night, and then New Orleans. I feel like they have the best shot right now to get a one seed in either conference.
Good stuff as always, Jeff Shorts. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, take care, bud.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
I was really shocked that Stephen A. Smith's breakdown of this game that happened yesterday was not the deciding factor. If you missed that, here is one of the funniest Mona Lisa of hot take missteps. Here is Stephen A. Smith breaking down a game featuring two players, Hunter Henry, who hasn't played all year, and Derek Thomas, who is no longer Derek Thomas, Derek Johnson, who is no longer on the Kansas City Chiefs. Derek Thomas, by the way, also no longer on the Kansas City Chiefs. Here is what Stephen A. Smith sounded like yesterday on First Take.
I'm going to have some faith in Spencer Ware and thinking that, you know, he can do some things. I'm keeping my eyes on this matchup right here.
Spencer Ware is
linebacker.
Out.
I'm sorry?
Spencer Ware is out.
Oh, yes, I forgot. I'm sorry, Max.
Yeah.
Absolutely, he is out. But I'm thinking Tyreek Hill. I'm thinking Patrick Mahomes. I'm also looking at the San Diego Chargers on offense, and I'm thinking about Hunter Henry and the way that he's played this year and as effective as he's been. He's going up against Derek Johnson, and I got to keep my eyes on that.
So neither one of those guys are actually in the game at all. And also, obviously, I say this too. I mean, the San Diego Charger mess up is not a big one, and frankly, the Spencer Ware being out with an injury, a lot of people might not be on top of that. But what did you think of Stephen A. Smith? And also, you can react to all of the game, the stories and permutations and outlines that we just ran through there. 877-996-6369. Let me go to Jeff in Virginia. What's up, Jeff?
Hey, what's going on, Clay?
Living the dream, my man. What you got for me?
I just wanted to react to the Stephen A. thing, man. If you'd take a look at his show. I don't know if you watch it regularly, but that's his go-to line. He just wants to go to that line every time he doesn't know what he's talking about. But, you know, he spends a lot of time hating on the Cowboys, so apparently he watches all the Cowboy games, but he don't watch the teams that have the better records games.
Yeah, I appreciate the call. I think the challenge in general when you do national sports talk or radio, and I do it, or you do national television, is there are a lot of teams you need to know. And so what I try to do is focus on the big names that everybody is going to know. I've done local radio. If you do local radio, then it makes sense that you dive into the nitty-gritty of individual teams because most of the people who are listening to you are huge fans of that individual team and everybody's watching the same game. By and large, I watch NFL all day. I watch college football all day. But I try and focus on the big names as opposed to trying to pretend that I'm some X's and O's genius and I'm going to talk to you about Hunter Henry against Derek Johnson. that's not the kind of matchup I would talk about. Because I, first of all, would have known that Hunter Henry has – I remember Hunter Henry from Arkansas a lot more than I remember Hunter Henry in the NFL so far. And Derek Johnson, I remember from last year in the playoffs when ESPN blew it and thought that he had picked up a fumble to return it for a touchdown against the Titans in the postseason. And in reality, Derrick Henry was already sitting on the ground when they lost the ball. So my question in general for you is, what do you expect from people like Stephen A? What do you expect from people like me? Clearly, we're not flawless, but that's about as big of a swing and a miss as you can possibly get. And so I'm curious, in general, your reactions. Jesse in Omaha. What's up, Jesse?
Yeah, for me personally, and to answer the question you just asked, it's kind of a confidence builder. I have a side gig on one of those huge national content engines where I write about sports, and as a result of that, I go on the radio as well once in a while, and I know I make those mistakes. My friends will listen to me, and they'll say, you know, there's a really fine line between what it is you do and what those big national guys do. And I'm like, no, you're crazy. But then I hear Stephen A. Smith make a mistake like that, and I'm like, well, maybe there's something to that. So, yeah, personally, kind of a confidence booster. He's a great writer, and he's a great entertainer, as are you. So I don't take anything away from anybody who's made it that far. But, yeah, it gives us little guys a little bit to, boost our confidence.
Yeah, look, I mean, first of all, reps matter to a large extent. The other thing is, when you try to be an expert in everything, oftentimes you're not an expert in anything. That's one of the first lessons they tell you when you get elected to Congress or you get elected to the Senate. It's like trying to drink from a fire hose. So if you try to be an expert in everything, it's impossible. What you have to do, and honestly, a lot of people do this when they become highly educated professionals too. You have to find one or two things that you can know really well and then just try to do a good job with everything else. Like, for instance, I think I know the NFL and college football pretty well, right? I think I know college football better than like 99.9% of the people in the media, and break it down better. I think I know NFL better than the vast majority. You don't hear me talk a lot about baseball on this show. I don't know baseball that well. Doesn't mean I don't try when baseball, when we're in the World Series or we're in the playoffs. Doesn't mean we don't have guests and that I don't try to ask intelligent questions. But I'm not coming on the morning after the World Series and pretending that I can tell you all the nuances of the two teams that have been playing all year. But so I think that all kind of balances out. Danny G, what you got?
So I'm wondering from a TV perspective, because just as an NFL fan, like, there was a lot of noise about Hunter Henry's injury because that is why they went out and re-signed Antonio Gates. And then Derek Johnson, that made a little bit of news because he signed with a rival in the Raiders before they released him. So to sleep on those storylines, is it because Stephen A. relies on his TV producers too much? So away from the job, is he kind of sleeping on things? Was he ad-libbing there? Like, how much of the TV for sports is the producer feeding you the information?
Yeah, so, I mean, I do 3 hours of radio, and you guys can speak to this. I don't think you send me one thing other than our ad reads before we come on and do 3 hours of TV. So I think, 3 hours of radio. So I think when you answer for TV, there's a little bit of a difference depending on who the person is. For me on TV, I read 30 minutes before we go on. I read, for the breakdown of how we do television, I think people are kind of fascinated by this. I will, when I finish the radio show this morning, I will go and start writing immediately on my website at OutKick. And then about 8 o'clock Pacific, so 11 a.m. Eastern, I will get an email from our producer that will lay out what we think the 5 opening stories will be on our show this afternoon. And those 5 stories, especially during football season, are almost always going to be football games. And so as part of that discussion, they'll say, what do you think about these 5 questions? And I will respond in an email and say, hey, I think X, Y, and Z. And obviously, we're a gambling show, so we also have to make gambling picks and everything else. But we do almost everything via email. And then about 30 minutes, so I'll do that at 11 a.m. Eastern. Respond to that email, read the emails from everybody else. Kind of, there's an email chain going, so I know what the topics are. About 30 minutes before our show, I will then go in and jot down my final thoughts of, and I'll have a producer who has emailed us with like some facts about those games. And I'll jot down my final thoughts. I'll also ask, sometimes if you watch our show, we have full screen graphics. I'll be like, hey, how has Philip Rivers done against the Kansas City Chiefs in his career. And they'll put that graphic up and send it to me and be like, hey, here's the numbers that you asked for. But it's almost all driven by us. And if I get something wrong, it's almost entirely going to be on me. Now, other guys may get totally like everything kind of written out for them, Ron Burgundy style, in which case I talked about yesterday. I think it's possible that somebody set Stephen A. Smith up because they give little synopses. Like you'll get a rundown when you do a show and you'll be like, we break it down by different segments. The A block is the open of the show before you go to commercial break. The B block is after the first commercial break. The C block is after the second commercial break. Like that's television terminology for how the show is laid out. And they will lay out everything for them the entire show. So it's a planned production. It's not like when you sit down to do an hour-long show, you know exactly what the topics are going to be in order. Whereas here on radio, it's a lot less planned, at least on our show. We know a guest, but any segment I can go in kind of any direction that I want to, other than I might get in Danny G's ear and say, hey, have that audio ready so we can make sure we're going to play it because I'm going to hit this in the next segment. Other than that, there's not a lot of prep, at least in my radio show. I like to kind of go freeform. I don't know what a caller is going to say. I don't know necessarily. I know what arguments I'm going to make, but I don't know how it's going to go elsewhere. So I think that wouldn't stun me if what happened was, and you guys can tell me if you think this is a valid possibility, but I think somebody might have done show prep for Stephen A. and just cut and pasted from a breakdown of last year's Chargers-Chiefs game. And I don't know, because I'm not an expert in the Chargers, expert in Chargers-Chiefs, but last year, could Hunter Henry against Derek Johnson have been a storyline that you would focus on if you were trying to sound smarter than you actually are, right? Because that's not, if you had said, hey, Antonio Gates, everybody knows Antonio Gates. If you had said, hey, Phillip Rivers having an MVP-style season, if you talk about Tyreek Hill like he did a little bit, if you talk about Patrick Mahomes, everybody knows those guys. But I think that Stephen A. was trying to sound smarter than the average fan because I don't think most people would even think of Hunter Henry or Derek Johnson as a distinguishing factor in the game. I think it's possible that one of his producers just cut and pasted from last year's rundown of the Chargers and Chiefs game and gave him bad information, and he read it, and in the back of his mind, he was thinking about that when they asked him what he thought about the game. I would bet that is how he ended up talking about Hunter Henry against Derek Johnson. I think somebody on his staff goofed and prepped him in an incorrect manner, and so that's how he ended up saying that and making such an egregious error. Getting the San Diego Chargers and the LA Chargers mixed up is a nothing story to me. That's very easy to do. Even the Spencer Ware story we talked about yesterday on the show, I thought that Spencer Ware would score a touchdown. It's an injury situation that has happened in the last couple of days. If you're following 100 different stories in the world of sports, you might not know the latest on Spencer Ware's injury because there are so many different angles to follow there.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com and within the iHeartRadio app.